evening. You're listening to WNUR 89.3 FM HD1 Evanston, Chicago. I'm Ilse von Heimberg.
And I'm Dylan Lanier. This is WNUR News at 6.
We've reached that time in the quarter, and for tonight's News at 6, we have our special broadcast. Typically, we spend weeks planning our stories, gathering sources, writing our scripts, and editing our packages to make the best possible segment.
But this year, WNUR did what Northwestern students do best: procrastinate. And this time, we procrastinated so hard that we left all of it to the 11th hour.
Well, actually, the 11th 24 hours. Our reporters had 24 hours, beginning at 4 p.m. yesterday and ending at 4 p.m. today, to build their entire stories from the ground up.
It was basically the journalism equivalent of pulling an all-nighter, which some of us actually did.
Jessica Watts and Georgia Kerrigan checked in with our reporters before, during, and after the hectic 24 hours.
So sit back, relax, and enjoy the absolute chaos we put our reporters through.
After all, they say diamonds are formed under pressure.
This is Around the Clock with WNUR News.
There's a common complaint among journalists when they have to get a story done on a tight deadline. I just don't have the time.
After a busy quarter with stories being put on the back burner, we decided it was time to crack down on this claim. For this special broadcast, we gave reporters 24 hours to get a story done. On Thursday, November 14th at 4 p.m., 11 journalists began the one-day mission.
We decided to document this 24-hour challenge along the way in an effort to get the truth about what it's like to make a package start to finish within a day.
When the clock struck 4, we began interviewing reporters to gauge how everyone was feeling.
Reporter Rachel Spears was in high spirits for her story with Ella Smith.
I'm very confident right now. Catch me in a few hours and we'll see. I'm very excited. I think that the chaos will add to the excitement.
While we worried about how some reporters would fare under this time crunch, Spears is no stranger to procrastination.
Do you usually procrastinate?
Usually, yeah. So this activity is great for me.
Does it work for you, procrastination?
Sometimes. Sometimes. 50% of the time it works out and everything's fine. And then other times it's the most stressful few hours of my life.
Meanwhile, Gabe Shumway and Edward Simon Cruz felt more wary of the hours ahead, each of which they would be spending listening to the same 11-second song, Row, Row, Row Your Boat, on a loop.
The video is 11 seconds and it will play 60 times what, 60? That's 3600
times 24
in an hour. Times 24, 864 over 11. We will be listening to it 7854 and a half times.
Krishna Kumar, reporting with John Kowalski, sounded initially confident, but he had some apprehension too.
It shouldn't be that hard.
Certainly. I hope not. I really hope not. Maybe I jinxed it.
While some teams decided to test their physical and mental limitations, Basil Free and Mariah Pettway took a different approach.
A lot of other people are doing a lot of endurance-based things, but we wanted to keep it lighthearted, throw a little nostalgia, have a little fun with it.
So we begin our countdown with an oldie, but a goodie.
It seems like the 24 hours have started.
All right, let's go. Play it. Run it.
Row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 life is but a dream.
Have you heard a sound so often you start tuning it out?
Certainly. Happens all the time with some of my professors. Kidding, kidding, I swear I pay attention.
How about if you could do that with a song? Gabe Shumway and Edward Simon Cruz tried it out.
Have you ever had a song stuck in your head that you just couldn't shake? Perhaps it lasted an hour, maybe two, but what if you were forced to listen to that song for 24 hours in a row? Whether it's for curiosity, the pursuit of a story, or just pure madness, that's the decision we made. But we still had to pick a song. For copyright purposes, it had to be in the public domain, and after an extensive search, we found one. Now, the problem here is that it was only the lyrics in the public domain. Lucky for us, the WNUR News staff has an amateur jazz singer.
All right, so we're here with John Kowalski, me, Gabe, John, and I guess Krishna's joining us too. We're in the bathroom.
One, a two, a one, two, three, four. Row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 life is but a dream.
Now that the tune was set, it began to set in just how much this would actually take. With a clip of just 11.26 seconds, we would listen to this tune about 7,700 times. But, like the ticking of a clock in the background of a room, could we merely tune it out like background noise? Could we continue focusing on work? There was only one way to find out.
Before we began, we prepared an unlisted YouTube video to play on loop, and we agreed on some ground rules. We could adjust the volume of the music as long as we could still hear it. We could move around, but we had to have an AirPod with the music playing in at least one ear. And we could fall asleep naturally, but we couldn't try to get out of hearing the song. Now, a disclaimer. Please do not try this at home. While we can attest to our experiences and reactions, we can't say how this will affect others. We started at 4:21 p.m. yesterday.
This is gonna be our next 24 hours. How do you feel?
Oh, f*** me. Even in the first 15 minutes, we were trying to minimize the damage. This meant we began forming strategies while walking across campus to our home base.
From here, our paths split.
I had a meeting.
I went to get dinner alone.
I crashed.
I went to class.
I got dinner with John, Krishna, and another friend. Then I went to the gym. I gotta be honest, I had a rough start. For about an hour, I was lying down, half napping in our dorm lounge while another friend did work on the side. I'm still not sure how they did it. And then John came in.
Row, row, row your boat. How are you doing, sir? It's been an hour or two or more, and he is going sad.
Sad.
Thankfully, my workout went surprisingly well.
It helps me stay focused. It keeps me to a consistent kind of cadence and forces me to kind of keep moving along and focusing on like on the reps I have to do and timing things out in a very kind of specific kind of way instead of, you know, losing track of things or letting myself get distracted by checking my phone a lot.
The best part? I had to take a shower right after, which meant bringing a speaker into the bathroom with me. And somehow, no one got mad.
I wasn't sure how to feel about listening to this song during a class, much less a three-hour discussion-heavy one. But the song's impact came and went as the class went on. After the first hour...
I've been able to zone it out mostly. It's playing fairly quietly, but I feel like I'm in my own head about it. If I wasn't in my own head, I'd be able to ignore it, but I'm just trying to focus on the content.
After that check-in, however, the hardest part of the class came. My professor gave us 15 minutes to read through a packet that he passed out. When there was other chatter, lecture, or discussion, the song wasn't bad. When it was just the song and my attempt to read, things got tough, but I persisted.
Overall, like, could have been a lot worse. The class made fun of me for it, but it was all good. My professor found it amusing, so we're doing well.
But on these long walks back to campus, there was also no other talking. As a result, I discovered an interesting phenomenon.
I realized that I've started talking to myself when I'm walking alone because the sound of my own voice helps to drown out the sound of John singing.
As for the sound of John himself...
How are you doing, man?
So we're now 6.5 hours in and I just encountered John for the first time.
Yeah, what's up?
Yeah, honestly, like, I'm holding up all right, but just seeing you and hearing your voice is, like, more exhausting than usual.
Wow.
You know, usually I can talk to you for a longer period of time, but I feel, like, more tired more quickly when speaking with you now.
You know, I take that as a compliment. That means I'm doing my job.
Okay.
When we reunited that night, we watched Groundhog Day in the dorm lounge. That wasn't breaking the rules, because we kept playing the song at a lower volume. I chose the movie on purpose. Just as we were listening to the same song over and over, Bill Murray's character relives the same day again and again. Groundhog Day is one of my favorite movies, and Gabe enjoyed it too. We did get distracted at certain moments, though.
I feel like if the movie was boring, or like a lot of times when the movie didn't have active words going on, it bothered me a little bit, or like the music, you could hear it more. But like when Bill Murray was just being like a hilarious dude, like I didn't pay any attention to the music, I zoned it out. As we slept through the night to the sound of the Freebie show Jury Duty, we slowly became better at tuning out the music. This continued into our morning routines, where we got breakfast, took showers, and brushed teeth, for example, without being bothered. We can't speak for the others in the bathroom who heard the song, but no verbal altercations occurred.
These 24 hours were a prime example of habituation in action. Habituation is the process of experiencing a stimulus so often that you get used to it. You may ignore the stimulus or respond less intensely to it. So over those 24 hours, we were wondering, could we ignore the irrelevant stimuli, sorry John, and continue focusing on the other tasks at hand? Yes. Yes, we did.
Merrily, 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 life was indeed but a dream. For WNUR News, I'm Gabe Shumway.
And I'm Edward Simon Cruz.
Row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 life is but a dream.
People can do a lot, or very little, with the 24 hours they have each day. But what would people do if they knew that the next 24 hours would be their last?
Isn't that the idea behind The Purge? Or Armageddon? I don't know. I haven't seen either of them.
Ella Smith and Rachel Spears have the story.
"24 hours can be a lot of time. Each day, about 17 million people celebrate their birthdays. 27,000 people get married, and you blink more than 9,000 times. You would have enough time to drive from Times Square to Mount Rushmore, and you could watch the entire Lord of the Rings trilogy, the extended version, twice, and have time to take a nap in between. You could even make a WNUR News special broadcast. But why does it always feel like there isn't enough time in the day? Why do people often yearn for another hour of sleep, or more time to do the things they love? What would people do if they were given just 24 more hours to live? We took 24 hours to ask 24 different people that question. Most said they would be with family and friends.
I'll fly back to China to see my parents and grandparents.
I would probably spend some of it with friends and some of it with my sister in Ohio.
Probably spend most of the time talking with friends and family.
First year, Jackie Maya said she would want to see the loved ones she hasn't seen for quite a while.
I would probably first go to, like, Texas and, like, visit my family, and then go to Mexico to visit some family members I haven't seen in a while.
Sophomore Sofia Vojovic echoed that sentiment, but made sure to include her dog.
I would honestly spend it with my family and my dogs, just because I haven't seen them in a while.
Another popular answer centered around getting to eat good food. School of Comm first years Patricia Liu and Mary Rose Cavanaugh had specific cravings, while others said they just wanted to eat something nice.
I would really quickly try to get back to my family in California. I would like see my boyfriend as well. I don't know, go to like the highest rated hot pot restaurant in the area and just feast. I would feast. See if I could skydive one more time. That's like the one thing on my bucket list that I want to do. And then hope that the new season of You comes out so I can finish watching that as well.
I think I'd be outside, probably by the water, and I'd find a good restaurant that had good steak to eat too.
I would just quit my job because I'm currently working, and then I would go to the fanciest restaurant in Chicago and like eat a dinner with my friends. And then call my parents, and then die.
Probably call my family, let them know what's up. I'd probably have them come to me, not vice versa. I wouldn't do anything crazy. I'd probably just hang out with friends, have a nice meal, because I feel like they'd let me into a nice restaurant if I told them what's up. I'd pay and all that. Other than food with friends and family, I don't think I'd do much other consumption or crazy experiences.
I would hang out with my friends and family, eat good food, spend a lot of money.
While the answers to where they would spend their final hours varied, there were a few people who just wanted to relax. Kyle Neal said he would relax at home, but Brody Bundes said he wanted to go to Greenland.
I don't know, just whatever would be most relaxing.
Probably travel to a place I've always wanted to be to go. Probably like a really pretty location, just relax for a day, and like text everyone I love.
Bundes was not the only one who would spend his time elsewhere. Riley Harrison would want to go out on a high note.
Oh, gosh. See, like, I'd want to travel somewhere, but I know that traveling would take part of that time. I would probably, like, throw a crazy party with my friends, go out with a bang.
Go on a hike, do some kayaking, spend time with family and friends.
That was Beaton sophomore Josephine Mascarenhas.
she would want to spend her final day in the mountains of Colorado. She wasn't the only one who would seek time outdoors in nature. Lucas Kritz would spend it outdoors with loved ones.
I would also spend it with my family, definitely, just because they're the people I'm closest to, my family and my close friends. I'd prefer it to be, like, outdoors and, like, in nature, just so I could appreciate the earth. That I'm not sure, like, what happens after you die, but, like, probably aren't on the earth, so I'd like to appreciate its beauty.
Oh my, we were just talking about this. Well, we were talking about the end of it. I would spend time with my girlfriend and, like, spend all my money and travel. Actually, traveling takes a lot of time. I think I would spend time with my girlfriend and my family. Like, right now, I would take, like, the shortest flight to go see them. And then, at the end of it, I would jump off of Half Dome.
Kritz and his friend, Alex Safayan, had been discussing their final 24 hours before we asked them the question. They both mentioned Half Dome, a rock formation in Yosemite National Park. Leia Friedman and Seth Carlson would also try something new.
I think probably spending it with friends and family, and then maybe going sky jumping or skydiving or something.
I would probably just spend it with family, people I'm very close to, and like maybe come up with something in the heat of the moment of, you know, something I've never done before that is easy to do, that I can just do it because I came up with some excuse not to do it before. So family, prayer, and doing something that maybe I've always wanted to do.
Henry Guo would also do something he has never done before, something hopefully no one listening to this story has ever done before.
Commit a crime or something, I don't know. Something simple, like try to rob something, maybe. I don't know. This is not something like super dangerous, but just for fun, maybe to see if I could actually pull it off.
While illegal activities are not recommended, they might add a little bit, or a lot of, excitement to the day. For two people we interviewed, they initially mentioned wanting to travel, but in the end, they chose more easygoing answers.
Panic. I'll tell my parents 24 hours to live. I'll fly back. Actually, I won't fly back. Flying back takes 12 hours. I'll walk all over Evanston, Chicago.
I would probably spend the day traveling, go to places I wanted to go to, but places I want to go to, they're 24 hours away, so probably just go back to spend time with my friends and families.
For Jeremy Huang and Bainan McCune, their last 24 hours would be spent doing things a little more low-key. They would continue to do the things most important to them, music and faith.
I don't know. Probably play lots of music, sing songs with my friends, lots of prayer, call my family. That's about it. Not too grand.
That's hard. I would probably, well, I mean, it obviously depends on the conditions, like why it's, I only have 24 hours. Probably spend a lot of time like in prayer. I think that's what I'd do.
The definition of a day well spent varies a lot from person to person. The 24th and final person we asked had an answer that was pretty different from everyone else. He didn't have anywhere he wanted to go or anything specific he wanted to do. Daniel Sofer would just keep living.
I don't think I'd change my life, to be honest.
And it's just as simple as that. For WNUR News, I'm Ella Smith.
With Rachel Spears.
Let's take another look at our reporters. What was it like in the thick of things? Jessica Watts and Georgia Kerrigan are back with their mid-story check-ins.
After about 8 hours, or roughly 2,600 plays of Row, Row, Row Your Boat, we checked back in with the teams to see if anyone had changed their tune.
Here's a behind-the-scenes listen about how our reporting teams fared as time marched on.
When we checked in with Spears, the amateur procrastinator lucked out on her 50% odds of facing stress and chaos, but not without some challenges.
I did get rejected 5 times in a row for interviews, which honestly surprised me that like, and it was like all in a row, but then everyone else so far has said yes.
Is it like easier or harder than you thought it would be going in?
Honestly, it's easier.
Luckily, a lot of our challengers felt this way. Shumway and Cruz found themselves much less distracted than expected.
What I found is that I've been talking to myself while I'm walking out loud instead of thinking in my head. Because when I'm talking out loud, it's helping me to drown out the music playing in my head rather than being in my own thoughts.
I think because you can use it to either place it in the background if you're talking with other people, or kind of use it to your advantage and like create a sort of rhythm like I did when I was like, at the gym or doing routine things, there are ways that you can adapt the kind of repetitive nature of the music to make it work.
With reporters seemingly unfazed by the imposed time restriction, we began to wonder why many still feel like they don't have the time to complete pressing tasks.
According to Ted Ed, Here's what happens when we're faced with a deadline. Quote, your brain responds like it would to any incoming threat. Your amygdala, a set of neurons involved in emotional processing and threat identification, releases hormones, including adrenaline, that kick off a fear response. And it's in the midst of this fight, flight, or freeze response that you decide to handle the threat by avoiding it in favor of some less stressful task, unquote.
So when we put off or back out of a story, does that make us lazy journalists?
Not exactly. Quote, procrastinators often report a high fear of failure, putting things off because they're afraid their work won't live up to their high standards, unquote. By setting the intentional standard of procrastination for this special broadcast, rather than allowing it to be accidental, our reporters faced the idea that whatever they did in 24 hours would be enough, because it had to be.
With that in mind, we left teams and their high alert amygdalas to face the inevitable, finishing their reporting, script writing, and audio editing under the wire.
MUD is one of four libraries on Northwestern's campus, but it's the only one open 24 hours.
With vending machines, bathrooms, and even showers, theoretically, you never have to leave. Sophia Quesa decided to take advantage of this for our special broadcast.
I always like to say I'm a person who needs to be busy. I have tons of classes, clubs, and plans to stay focused and be the quote-unquote best version of myself. Like, for example, here's a regular Monday for me. I'll wake up at 8 a.m., get ready, listen to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend while I run on the treadmill, and shower all before my 9:30 class. I go to that first class, then sprint half a mile or so to my second class, get lunch, do all my homework, then I go to a couple meetings for a club here or there, get dinner after, work on a WNUR story or some stuff for the Dolphin Show, and then finish it all off with my weekly theater board meeting from 10 p.m. to 12 a.m. I shuffle back to my dorm, go to bed, and then in one form or another, I do it all again. And again. And again. Supposedly, according to my own set of principles, this should have made me the best I can be. And I'm perfectly happy with it. Right? Well, according to a study from the University of Miami, I wasn't. Their study, done in 2020, found that changing one's daily routine led to a better mood and an overall increase in happiness with one's life. So I decided to give it a shot. But of course, because I can't do things casually, I took it to the extreme.
Hi, my name's Sophia Quesa. I'm a sophomore at Northwestern. I'm a journalism major. It's currently 6:30 p.m. on Sunday, November 10th. And 30 minutes from now, I will be spending the next 24 hours in MUD Library.
For those unacquainted with it, the Seeley G. MUD Library is one of four libraries at Northwestern. It has tons of text, study spaces, and glass windows, which give a great view of the outside. But most importantly for this story, it is the only library on campus open to students 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So my mission, if I choose to accept it, stay within the confines of MUD Library for 24 hours, document the entire thing, and maybe learn a couple of things along the way, or at least try not to lose my sanity. This is 24 Hours in MUD. Now, this was rather uncharted territory I was delving into, so I decided to make my own rules for the gauntlet. 1. I would only be able to eat food from the library. 2. I would only allow people to visit me, but they couldn't bring me anything. No chargers, no food, nothing but their company. 3. Under no circumstances could I leave the library. Ever. In order to ensure the success of that last point, I sent some emails to my professors, got out of class, and told the people involved in the meetings I had scheduled that we would have to talk virtually. I packed my backpack of supplies. I dotted my I's, I crossed my T's, and on 7 p.m. on November 10th, I was locked in. Now, the first few hours went by pretty quickly. Despite the fact it was a Sunday night, the library was absolutely packed. I got lucky and managed to secure a study cubicle near the entrance. I did my reading for my religion class, texted some friends, sent some updates, scrolled on Instagram, nothing too different from my normal routine. But eventually, I got to the first hurdle. I was hungry. Eventually, after some wandering, I found a machine called Farmer's Fridge, which specializes in sandwiches, salads, and other grab-and-go meals. So $8.99 later, I treated myself to their Green Goddess salad.
Honestly, not too bad. It's, like, dressing's good, besides the spoon not really being the best vehicle for the salad. Gotta say, like, solid 8 out of 10. Thanks, Farmer's Fridge.
After my spoon-fed dinner, I made my way back up to the second floor and went over to the Glasswold study area near the lobby stairs. I sat down and did 3 hours of reading for my English class. This really tired me out, but it brought me to midnight. And while I didn't want to do anything but sleep, I knew I had to take one item off my to-do list before I went to bed. I had to go to the mud showers.
Which is this, like, single stall, and honestly, very, very nice.
Mud is one of a number of buildings on campus, with showers in the bathroom, possibly as an aid to those who want extra long study sessions. But yes, to get it on record, I did officially shower in mud. And do you know what? Not the worst shower on campus. The water pressure was a bit iffy and the temperature a bit hard to regulate, but overall, a solid 7 out of 10. After joining the list of daredevils who have showered here, I had to lock back in as I contended with the next big task, finding a place to sleep. Thankfully, I got a bit of luck in the form of an empty glass-walled study room.
Okay, it is 12:50. I got myself a crunch bar from the vending machine. The goal is to go to sleep, and not get kicked out.
Now, to answer the question on none of your minds, how exactly did I end up sleeping? I slept in an L shape across 3 chairs, which is to say very uncomfortably. But I was so exhausted, I didn't care. And eventually, I fell into a somewhat restful sleep. However, that didn't end up lasting for too long.
Okay, it's currently 3:52 a.m. Currently, from my vantage point, mud is empty. All the people that have been here hours earlier are gone. It's quiet. It's peaceful. It's a little sad. I have to go back to bed.
I managed to rest for 3 more hours in my desk chair bed, but eventually I decided to call it quits as I hit a major milestone.
Okay, so it's officially 7 a.m., which means I am halfway through my 24 hours, and it's not looking good.
But there was something nice about the early wake-up. Despite the night of mediocre sleep, I was able to watch the sunrise, which I haven't been able to do as much as I'd like. After 2 more hours, I was joined by my first friend in nearly 18 hours, my roommate and Medill sophomore, Grace Jordan Weinstein.
I think if anyone can do this show of endurance and strength, I think it's you.
Yeah, so as someone who's studied in mud a lot before, what is some of your favorite features of the library?
I like the showers. I've taken phone calls in there before because they're kind of good spaces for that, but that was during the day when people weren't really showering. There's different options for sitting. There's couches and desks and spinny chairs and more reclining chairs. I think there's a good variety of chairs and furniture that hopefully has kept you entertained for the past however many hours you've been here.
We're nearing in on 18 hours.
That's insane.
Yeah. So, is there anything that you want me to try to make sure I do before I have to be out of here at 7 p.m.?
I'd say there's a lot of different vending machines, as I've already mentioned. Maybe try to get in on those. Maybe try to sit in as many different seating options as possible.
I tucked away my expert's advice for future use. Meanwhile, Grace and I worked and chatted for the next few hours, but eventually, I found myself hitting the midday wall.
Okay, so it is currently 2:25, which means I have about, give or take, 4.5 hours left to go. And it's gonna be a long, long time.
It was odd. I had survived 19 and a half hours by this point, so 4.5 shouldn't have felt so daunting. But with Grace having left, no meetings to attend, and no more homework to do, to be honest, I didn't know what to do with myself. I was all dressed up with nowhere to go, so I had to try and relax. I watched videos. I sat and watched the people walk across the quad to class. I started wandering around. I texted with my twin sister. I talked with my mom, and my mood began improving. I started to feel less tired, and eventually, this time passed by quickly enough for me to welcome my next guest at 4:15 p.m., communications sophomore Ellie Caro.
If anything, I think you're bringing a little light to this hoary, evil space.
You're not a fan of mud?
Nope.
Not a fan.
Never.
Like, do you want to stay here for 24 hours?
Me?
Yeah.
Do I want to stay here for 24 hours?
Yeah.
Absolutely not.
So suffice to say, mud wasn't Ellie's cup of tea. After rehearsing our scene to present later that week, we left the room, since technically we never reserved it. As the farmer's fridge siren song lured me back.
I don't know if it's like the 22 hours getting to me, but like I'm like so excited to see the pesto pasta bowl. But you know what?
The Sophia of the normal world would have enjoyed that pasta bowl ironically and seen it as a laughable breaking point in my decaying mental state. But the Sophia of Mud Library was different. I'd lost my cynicism, a casualty of hour 8 or so. And let me tell you, it was really good. It was nice that something so simple as a good meal cheered me up and pushed me through this slog. As the clock struck 6 p.m., aka 1 hour till my release, I hopped back on Zoom for another meeting. This time, an executive board meeting for Crush, a publication I'm involved with on campus.
And then I was still planning on, like, the weekend after your
position. By then, word had spread, and I'd got a couple questions about my mud experiences these past 23 hours, and some nice words of encouragement. The meeting wrapped up around 6:30, so that left me with 30 minutes to kill. How would I spend them? I'd spent nearly a day here, so I felt like I had to make this time count for something. I should have done that picture-perfect cinematic ending I always wanted. But I didn't. Instead, I decided to take Grace's advice. I went to the vending machine one last time. I spent $2.25 on a pack of Chuckles, this 5-pack of brightly colored jelly candies I used to get all the time with my grandma. I went out to my favorite spot, the seats right by the wall of glass at the front of the library, and just sat there. I watched cars go by, little windows of light flicker on and off across the horizon. I watched my own reflection too. It was nice to just breathe. And eventually, the clock hit 6:59, and I gathered my stuff, went down the stairs, stood awkwardly by the lobby for 20 or so seconds, and then I was free.
Oh my god, that feels so good. Oh my god. Okay, so it is now 7:01, which means I have officially completed my 24 hours in Mud Library. I don't know, like, I feel great. I also feel really tired, and, little cold. I didn't bring a jacket, and I haven't been outside all day, so I didn't know it would be this cold. But that's okay. That's okay. But
whenever I told people of this idea to spend a full day in mud, the most common response I got was, "Why would you do that to yourself?" And I can understand why. 24 hours is a deceptively long time. So would you really want to be spending it in a library? But the thing was, despite my tiredness and some hiccups, those 24 hours may have been some of the most restorative time I've had on this campus. In a place that's prevailing culture is to do everything all the time, or that "and" is in our DNA, it can often feel that if you're not busy, you're doing something wrong. I certainly bought into that by taking on more classes and clubs and commitments than I probably should be able to handle sometimes. But mud forced me to relax. Once I ran out of work, I had to spend some time with my friends, with art and music, with myself. I got to have some actual reflection and take some time to stop and smell the roses, which is a lesson I'm going to actually earnestly try to bring back into my life. And for that, well, I wouldn't trade that for anything. But my god, I did it! And I'm never gonna do that again. I'm never gonna do that again. But I did it. For WNUR News, I'm Sophia Kesa.
With only 24 hours to complete their segment, John Kowalski and Krishna Kumar decided they needed to make use of each and every hour.
Here's the story of their night at Northwestern.
One of the most common gripes students have with Northwestern is its lack of nightlife.
But we've always found that a strange contention. After all, we always manage to find something to do at night.
So we took it upon ourselves to experience a night at Northwestern in its full glory.
Our preparations for the intense endeavor we had ahead of us began with a dinner at one of the two dining halls open latest on campus, Plex East.
Look, I'm John Kowalski.
Krishna Kumar.
If you can't tell, we're having a good time. We're currently walking over to Plex.
The seating area was bustling. And immediately upon our entrance, I was greeted by a familiar face, Weinberg freshman Peter Platosh.
We interviewed him about his take on the nightlife situation.
I don't think it's as bad as people make it out to be.
He elaborated further.
I would say it's definitely something that people can be part of if they want to. I don't think anybody's forcing anybody to be a part of it. I think it strikes a good balance, especially for some people who want to actually, like, you know, unwind after midterms.
Do you think there's options? Do you think there's stuff to do at night?
I think there's options, yeah.
After we bid our farewells, ate some dinner, and discussed our plans for the night, we conversed with another diner, freshman Messiah Fiasi, on our way out to help inform our future directions.
Do you have any suggestions, any destinations?
Probably hit up Chipotle, some food. because you'd be hungry.
This suggestion of grabbing some more food really spoke to us. So we followed up our dinner with a visit to 847 Late Night at Franz, probably the biggest late night attraction in all of South Campus.
I mean, it is in their name. They know what they're doing.
You know, we fancy ourselves Franz connoisseurs, if you will, but tonight we were approaching our beloved institution with a more evaluative
eye. I mean, obviously we've been to Franz before, but a lot of people suggested Franz as a premier destination.
As we walked into the grand entryway of Willard, we were engulfed by the hustle and bustle of the cafe.
We asked fellow patron Shreya Saha, a freshman in chemical engineering, about things to do at night.
Is there like places to go or things to do at night? Or is it just kind of
I think a lot of places in dorms, the lounge areas are kind of lively like late into the night because there can be people playing pool in there or doing homework as well. Lounge areas of dorms, like anything could happen.
Having satisfied the mandatory Franz visit portion of any great late night at Northwestern, we decided to follow up on Shreya's suggestion and headed back to our dorm.
It was a very relaxing couple of hours. We watched some television and hung out with friends.
But, of course, the night beckoned us, and we had to set back out on our expedition.
Our next destination was Lisa's Cafe, the North Campus equivalent of Franz.
Too. We're heading up to Lisa's right now, so hope all goes well with y'all.
Nice time at Franz. We're on the trek up north. Maybe we'll see something interesting.
Chip, chip, cheerio.
Cheerio.
On our long walk up Sheridan, we ran into Weinberg senior Bobby Axelrod and asked him, in all his wisdom, what he thought of Northwestern nightlife.
I mean, I think, you know, Northwestern, I feel like in many ways has a reputation for being kind of quiet compared to a lot of schools. They don't call it Nerdwestern for nothing.
We chewed on this while we trudged up north, and before we knew it, we'd made it to Lisa's.
Even though we walked in 15 minutes before closing, the scene was lively and active.
Not to mention their food had no right to be as good as it was. The whole experience was almost enough to sway us away from our status as diehard Franz defenders.
I feel like the Franz versus Lisa's debate. We were Franz believers, but I feel like there's like...
This is pretty elite. This is
pretty great.
Once we finished, I came to the realization that the night was getting away from me and my math homework was calling my name.
So we, of course, headed to the premier late-night study spot on campus, Mudd Library. There, we'd be surrounded by fellow brave soldiers on the front lines of the never-ending struggle to keep our workloads at bay.
Our journey was uneventful, and once we got there, we regrouped.
Currently working on Krishna's playlist for jazz in the morning. Mm-hmm.
We are also editing the script. We're also math homework. I gotta lock in.
I'm gonna maybe do some work and then probably take a little bit of a nap.
Yeah.
I think that'll be good, yeah?
Yeah.
John did follow through on his word.
I slept for 5 hours on one of the couches with him, Mud. You know, it was a rather comfortable experience, all things considered.
And as a result, he ended up missing my interview with third-year mechanical engineering student Kamsi and Dave about the Mud experience.
It's very lively, like, in the midday, I guess, like, at night. Like, it usually thins out a lot, like, especially, like, past like, midnight, it thins out a lot. So, like, people are a lot more, like, spread out in, like, in their little quarters of the library once more spaces are freed up. So, like, because, like, most people who stay overnight are probably, like, studying for something that's tomorrow, so... Yeah, they probably just go to little corners and just hunker down.
This was followed by a lot of uninteresting labor, so we can skip forward to the conclusion of our odyssey.
I woke up around 6:15, and both of us opted to leave Mud to head to our final destination, the top of the Siegel Visitor Center parking garage.
It's Krishna. I'm here with John. Finally woke up.
Hey.
And so we made it through the night. No one's left in Mud. Everyone is gone. At least as far as we can see. We're the last people left, which is
pretty impressive, I feel. And yeah. So we're heading out to watch the sunrise at Seagull.
And once we arrived...
We could feel the excitement building.
We'll let our first-hand reactions speak for themselves.
So, we came up to the roof of Seagull to see the sunrise, and there is no sunrise.
Not only is there no sunrise, but the loop, so it appears, is covered in, like, a small amount of fog and mist.
Yeah, it's all gray and blue and grayscale. There's no sunlight.
It's quite serene, really.
Yeah, the sky blends with the lake.
It's giving alternative indie.
It is giving alternative indie.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's grand.
So, after our intense night of adventure, what were our conclusions?
Well, to be honest, it seems like maybe we do live up to the nerd Western moniker. A large majority of the people we saw late at night were studying or completing work.
But the people we met were also mostly excited, cheerful, and having a great time. And isn't that what college nights are really all about?
For WNUR News, I'm John Kowalski.
And I'm Krishna Kumar.
Remember the cinnamon challenge?
How could I forget? Mainly, I remember my mom yelling at me and saying I shouldn't do it.
How about banana Sprite?
Yeah, I can't say I remember that one. But I do remember the 24 hours in Walmart challenges. Those were my favorite. Or the ones where people mailed themselves in a box to see if they'd make it.
Basil Free and Mariah Pettway offer a whirlwind tour of 12 infamous internet challenges to celebrate WNUR's biggest challenge yet, preparing this special broadcast in just 24 hours.
Hello, this is Glowzer. Is you okay? Is you good? Because I wanted to know. Okay.
In the spirit of challenges, Basil and I are here to discuss some of the most popular challenges that have defined YouTube history.
Since the dawn of the platform, challenges have captured the attention of risk seekers, proto-influencers, laypeople, and everyone in between. It's hard to find someone who has not taken a part in one of these trends, or at least know someone that has.
But why have these challenges become so popular? The impulse to participate in these trends stems from a desire to be accepted and praised by peers. Northwestern Media Psychology PhD candidate Callie Calney explains this phenomenon.
I think if we look at the population that tends to participate in these challenges, it tends to skew much younger. And that sort of helps explain why people would participate. Younger people tend to overestimate the rewards of a risky behavior. So if all your friends are, it's sort of the classic peer pressure example, right? If all your friends are doing it, and the reward that can come from that behavior of doing the ice burn challenge is laughter or popularity or going viral, younger people might be more, they might feel like that reward is a little bit more tangible than any risk of like a third degree burn.
First, let's talk about an internet classic. The Cinnamon Challenge was originally popularized by YouTuber Glozell Green, who you have heard at the top of the story. The aim of the challenge was to attempt to swallow a spoonful of cinnamon, often resulting in coughing and choking. Here's Weinberg Jr. Miller Watson on his experience eating the spice.
My sisters put me up to it because they were on the internet at that time and I was kind of unaware of the effects of the cinnamon challenge, and so they thought it'd be funny, you know, if I were to try it and they could film it and show their friends and whatever. And so me, not having eaten any cinnamon before, said, you know, it's going to be easy. And I took a whole spoonful of cinnamon and tried to swallow it in one go. And of course, that led to me coughing and, you know, gagging and just getting it all over. And then somehow they made me clean it up.
Speaking of spicy things, the next two challenges involve eating hot foods. The Ghost Pepper Challenge saw participants filming themselves trying to handle one of the world's hottest peppers. The One Chip Challenge was similar, except with the food of choice being a devilishly hot tortilla chip rather than a pepper.
To cool things down a bit, let's talk about the gallon challenge. The goal of this challenge was to attempt to drink an entire gallon of milk in 1 hour without throwing up. Obviously, the results were not the prettiest.
On the topic of nasty things, let's move on to the banana Sprite challenge. Similar to the gallon challenge, this one saw participants try to eat two bananas and chug a liter of Sprite as fast as possible. you can see where this one is going.
You know what's also gross? The Bean Boozled Challenge. I remember doing this with my friends at a sleepover, and I can still taste the skunk spray bean till this day. Calney mentions how these challenges can foster a sense of community.
So, you know, I do think there are probably circumstances in which the outcome of the challenge itself maybe benefits society more broadly. And I think that's exactly what makes them difficult, is that people do engage with them because they see their engagement as participating in a broader community.
Though some of these might seem like lighthearted fun, some challenges can be dangerous for that peer pressure reason we mentioned earlier.
Yeah, absolutely. Here's Calney on more about that.
So a YouTube challenge, there's sort of this spectrum of challenges. So you have, like you mentioned, the Bean Boozled Challenge. You know, the risk of engaging in that is probably low. The worst thing that could happen is that you get like a vomit flavored jelly bean. Then on the other hand, you have very dangerous challenges like the Tide Pod Challenge, or before our call, I was reading about the Ice Burn Challenge, which apparently, I guess, is a thing where you put salt on your hand and then you put ice on it. Obviously, the potential for harm with these challenges is much higher.
Not all of them are dangerous. The Ice Bucket Challenge, for example, brought attention to ALS, a neurodegenerative disease. Calney emphasizes how she distinctly remembers doing the Ice Bucket Challenge for the ALS cause.
And there was this sense of like, we're not just engaging in this to go viral on Facebook, but we're, you know, it was something like every video will be a donation to the to ALS Society or something like that. So, you know, I do think there are probably circumstances in which the outcome of the challenge itself maybe benefits society more broadly.
In a similar vein, the Mannequin Challenge took the world by storm back in 2016. Set to Ray Strummer's hit song Black Beatles, the challenge was easily replicated, happening in places like schools, newsrooms, and even concerts. Here's Medill sophomore Grace Jordan-Weinstein on her experience taking part.
In sixth grade, I was in a Spanish class, and because of the whole class asked the teacher if we could do the Mannequin Challenge, and he said yes, naturally. And so we played the song, and everyone was striking poses. Remember, one boy picked up another kid, like military style, over his shoulder and then had to hold it like that just because he could. It was pretty fun. I don't know where that video is.
Some challenges also took on a more paranormal undertone. Personally, I can remember trying the Charlie Charlie Pencil Challenge in the time of my life where I was obsessed with all things creepy. I wasn't able to get my hands on a Ouija board, so my sister and I made the four quadrant paper and laid out the pencils, hoping to connect with the spirit world.
So, did it actually move?
Girl, what do you think?
If that was too creepy for you, you might remember the Kylie Jenner Lip Challenge. This one saw people trying to recreate the celebrity's lips by sucking air into a cup-like object.
Here's Medill Jr., Chloe Mintz, on her experience trying to get Jenner's luscious lips.
So my eighth grade class took a trip to Washington, D.C., and as we were driving around D.C. on one of the buses, we, for whatever reason, had gotten very bored after singing Party in the USA too many times, and we thought that we would just use the water bottles to mimic the Kylie Jenner lip challenge. It was really uncomfortable. My lips did not survive. No, just kidding. They're fine. But it was not a good experience. My mom was also a chaperone, so then she got mad at me.
Finally, this wouldn't be a story about internet challenges if we didn't try at least one ourselves. To end the story, we're going to try the Chubby Bunny Challenge.
All right. So for the final challenge, we'll be doing Chubby Bunny, which basically entails putting one marshmallow in your mouth at a time and saying the words Chubby Bunny until you can no longer speak anymore. So this is going to be our first marshmallow.
Chubby Bunny.
Chubby Bunny. Second one.
Chubby Bunny.
11.
That was the Chubby Bunny challenge.
Wow.
I got 11. Thanks for listening. For WNUR News, I'm Basil Free.
And I'm Mariah Petway.
Phew. Now that our challenge is officially over, let's check in and see how our reporters are doing after their marathon 24 hours.
Once more, Georgia Kerrigan and Jessica Watts do one final check-in with our reporters.
When the 24 hours were all said and done, our reporters were feeling the relief of this challenge being over.
We did one final check-in to see how they were feeling.
I think it was a very fulfilling experience.
Yeah, it's thriving. At least that's my opinion. Yeah,
I agree. I think doing it all so fast, it was intense, but it was fun. It was rewarding.
Some felt the benefits of working in pairs.
I also am getting like writer's block or like hit different roadblocks where I'm like, I don't really know how to word this correctly. But like having someone to kind of just like push past those and like bounce creative ideas with made the process go really smooth. And like we were able to finish it in one night.
Yeah, I'm really surprised that it didn't take us that long. I think I was just surprised by how fast Rachel was doing these interviews. By the time I started the audio editing and just like getting the interview clips together, she had already interviewed 12 people, and then by the end of the night, she'd interviewed 21.
And for arguably one of our most challenged teams, the night met almost none of their original expectations.
I thought I was going to be more frazzled by now.
I feel like, honestly, the worst part of it was when I was in class last night and I was so in my own head about it, just because of the reactions of others. Like, I had a feeling my parents were going to be, like, very, like, don't do this. But once they were, like, super chill about it, I was like, okay, like, the people I've trusted with my safety for most of my life are generally thinking this is not an issue.
But finally, for one reporter, a long-held dream was finally realized.
I can finally like sleep a little better at night knowing that I took advantage of this opportunity. Special broadcast helped me accomplish my dreams. That's really beautiful.
For WNUR News, I'm Georgia Kerrigan.
And I'm Jessica Watts.
That's all for this quarter's special broadcast, Around the Clock with WNUR News. I think our reporters have earned themselves a good night's sleep tonight.
Yes, they have. I'm exhausted just listening to it. For more news updates and reports, follow us on X at WNUR News and Instagram at WNUR News 893.
You can listen to all of tonight's stories in full on our website, WNURnews.org. That's WNURnews.org. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
What a wonderful crew we have here today. Georgia Kerrigan is our producer. Our reporters are Georgia Kerrigan, Jessica Watts, Edward Simon Cruz, Gabe Shunway, Ella Smith, Rachel Spears, Sophia Kesa, John Kowalski, Krishna Kumar, Mariah Petway, and Basil Free. I'm Dylan Lanier.
And I'm Ilse von Heinberg. We still have one more week of shows for the quarter. It truly has flown by. Catch our next newscast on Monday evening, 6 p.m. Thanks for tuning in.
Now, back to scheduled programming.